On Robin Hood Radio, today we are joined by Community Health and Wellness Chief Medical Officer, Dr. Sarah Humphreys. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Now, I understand that you are in the North Canaan facility because you also have one in Torrington. And do we have one in Winston as well? You're focused into North Canaan, so the people up here would see you as a doctor when they came in there, I assume.
Yes, exactly.
We wanted to talk about blood pressure today.
Well, yeah, so that's, you know, it sounds a little boring on the surface, but so many people have high blood pressure, and it's often very overlooked, so I think it's an important thing to talk about.
Well, you know what I notice, and you know how we all, you know this from patients, we always go to Google and check your work for you.
Yeah, I'm glad. Yes,
that's right.
I am aware.
And you know, you see different numbers all the time, and they seem to be put forth in age groups, in body weight. Lord knows how many things. And sometimes I find that what is my blood pressure supposed to be? How do I really figure that out?
Yeah, I mean, that you're really right, actually, because the guidelines changed a few years ago, and actually now they're more strict. So what we used to just see and consider as normal blood pressure is often actually too high. So normal blood pressure for most people is actually 120 over 80 or less, if you can believe that, because, you know, who really has that blood pressure?
I don't.
I know. And then 120 over 80 or more until you get to 130 is actually pre-hypertension. And then there's grades that come after that. So yeah, you're right about that. It's a little confusing. They did change the guidelines recently.
Who sets those guidelines?
Normally it's consensus. I mean, unfortunately in medicine is true with a lot of different fields. There are different organizations that set their own guidelines, and then there tries to be like a consensus opinion. So for this, it would be like the American Heart Association and, you know, various other organizations. But I think the purpose behind it is not to freak everyone out, but just to, like, take it more seriously, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Again, just you see so many different ways or so many different theories on what is high and what is low. And so, you know, you're going from a benchmark, but is it going to vary by an individual patients based on the other factors I talked about earlier? Is my blood pressure my right blood pressure, if you will, going to be just for me, or is the next person over has a different number for whatever reason?
To a degree, I mean, the people that we worry about most in terms of that are when you get significantly older, because you don't want to be too strict in lowering, you know, an older person's blood pressure, because you don't want them to start feeling the symptoms of actually being hypotensive when the blood pressure is too low, for obvious reasons. You don't want them to fall and everything. But I do think there is some individual variation. Like, I would love it if everyone hung around 120 over 80, but it's really not realistic for a lot of people. So I think sort of to, like, individualize it and optimize your own best blood pressure, whatever that looks like.
Now, let's say I'm going along and I haven't been to a doctor in a while. Are there any signs that would tell me if I was starting to have serious blood pressure?
So that's a really good question, and I'm glad you brought it up, because, you know, we call high blood pressure the silent killer for the reasons that it really is asymptomatic until it's so high that you do start experiencing symptoms. So some of those symptoms would be headaches, worse and like you've never had before, especially if you're someone who doesn't have headaches, sometimes chest pain, sometimes shortness of breath, and then sometimes blurry vision. But if you're having those symptoms, it really is high, and it's too high, and it kind of creeps up slowly over time, and you're not feeling anything until it hits that critical point, and you really don't want to get there, which is why we encourage people to, you know, go to the doctor frequently and monitor their blood pressure.
What happens when you hit that critical area?
So basically, blood pressure is the pressure in the blood vessels that your heart is pumping against. And so when that pressure is too high and you're hitting that critical area, it, you know, we call it hypertensive urgency and sometimes emergency, where your risk of having a heart attack or a stroke are really, really high.
Okay, now let's move on to that famous one of what do you do about it? Because I know one of the things that my doctor has told me, which I kind of don't care for, is the diet thing. And I have this philosophy, if I'm going to go, I'm going to go feeling good about what I'm eating instead of eating cardboard.
Well, so I like that you say that too, because so lifestyle changes are really what we try to encourage in most people, just because a lot of people don't want to introduce a new medication, especially if they're already taking a bunch and if it's something that they'll have to take lifelong. Although it's important to say also that it's not a failure to be on a blood pressure medication. But diet-wise, a heart-healthy diet is what we recommend. And I agree, you should not be eating cardboard. The goal is really for people to find, like, a diet that's delicious to them. So it might be hard if you're eating McDonald's every day and you love, you know, the Big Mac. But you can make really delicious, heart-healthy food that is delicious and also healthy. So it's the obvious things like more fruits, vegetables, whole grains, more lean meats, so less saturated fat, less red meats, and more like, you know, chicken and fish. And a big one for blood pressure is salt. So it's not really even just like how much salt you're adding at the table, but there's in the American diet, there's salt hidden in so many foods. So, I mean, an easier thing would be to say to try and limit processed foods, because generally if there's a bunch of ingredients on the back that you can't pronounce and you don't know what they are, that's a processed food, and those are generally very, very high in salt. So
I believe that's a big topic right now as to what's in our food now, because you don't know, and absolutely, I've heard that before, you know, just because it tastes good doesn't mean it is good.
Exactly.
And again, yeah, if I can't read or even know even vaguely what the ingredients are, I should stay away from that.
Exactly. So even just, you know, a simple thing to do is just to start reading labels. So even, you know, certain canned soups, you think, oh, I'm eating a canned tomato soup. How bad could that be? Some of them are great. Others are just have a lot of those ingredients that you can't process, and those ones tend to be very, very high in sodium. So that's the problem, is a lot of people are eating very high salt diets, but they're not even aware, because they're not saying, you know, sitting at the dinner table pouring a bunch of salt into their food. It's just already in the food that they're preparing, if that makes sense.
Oh, no, absolutely. That's what I was thinking. Most people would say, oh, if I'm not pouring it on there, it's not there. But it is definitely there. And especially in soups, I notice, when you look at those labels, there's a lot of salt in that.
Another thing to mention is alcohol can raise your blood pressure. So, you know, if you're drinking a lot of alcohol and you cut down, that might help with lowering your blood pressure. And then the other thing is physical activity. And I try, again, you don't have to start running marathons. That's not really realistic for people who are otherwise pretty sedentary. But even just, you know, go on a pretty brisk walk one day and see how it feels. And if you can do that a couple few times per week, it's about the little changes that you can sort of start and maintain over your lifetime, not about big dramatic changes. It's why, like, crash diets don't really work.
You know, there was a period, and maybe it's still going on, in a lot of the fast foods and restaurants where they were switching from salt as we know it to sea salt. Is there, what does sea salt do as far as this is concerned?
You know, honestly, I don't know. I might have to go to Dr. Google for that one.
Oh, there you go.
I don't know. I don't know if there's a difference. I mean, I can say that if I hear or see sea salt, to me it sounds healthier, but I don't know if there's any actual evidence behind that claim.
Yeah, no, I don't know either, because I know I don't like it. Like on French fries especially, I like good old salt. So if I go by Wendy's or something, you know, you don't have a salt packet, so I can't eat your fries.
yeah, that's interesting.
They have all sea salt there. So we have all the changes you can make in diet. You don't have to eat cardboard, as I like to say.
Yes.
Now, increase the physical activity you talked about a bit. And does that, if you are engaging in a lot of physical activity already, is it possible you could be doing too much physical activity?
In your life? I mean, it's very unusual that someone is actually doing too much physical activity. You know, the recommendation is always if you're middle age, say, and you have been pretty sedentary, to you might want to go get checked out by a doctor or other healthcare provider before you start a pretty intense exercise regimen, just because, let's say, you do have maybe an underlying heart condition that could trigger that to sort of escalate. But too much physical activity is, I mean, I hardly ever see it.
Yeah.
You know,
I know I don't see it. I consider, yeah. I tell my doctor, oh, my physical activity. I get in the car, I walk into work, I walk out of work, get in the car, walk into the house. So that's it
exactly.
for the day.
Exactly. I mean, I think it's harder also in communities where, you know, suburbs or where we live now, where you do drive everywhere. It's much harder to get just even enough steps in during the day, because if you live in a city or a different kind of environment, you're kind of getting that in just by default going about your day. So you do have to be sort of more intentional about it, I would say, sometimes, and that can be a challenge just because we're all short on time. And, you know, but again, try and make it fun, you know, go on walks with a friend or someone that you like, and, you know, see the nature, stay away from the bears, but it can be fun.
Yeah, I guess that's a good point. As I'm thinking about this, I think it's important maybe to talk about taking your own blood pressure, because I know that I have two devices that I utilize at home. The first one I purchased actually was one that went on the wrist. And my personal doctor said to me, no, I don't trust those to be accurate. So then I got a cuff. You read in places you're not supposed to have any clothing on to the area where you're putting the cuff on. It should be right to the skin. Is that yes or a no for sure? Because, again, when you look at these things, you'll get different answers, different opinions. And I'll even sometimes go to the doctor's office, and at the beginning, they strap it on me, and it's not skin to skin.
So you're raising a bunch of really good, important points. The first thing I want to say is I'm really impressed that you're taking your blood pressure at home, because that's the number one thing that's hard about blood pressure and high blood pressure diagnosis, is that you go to the doctor and it's a snapshot of time. And often in the doctor's office, we're actually sometimes pretty terrible at taking it the correct way. Like you said, it should be skin to skin. Often times someone's just, you know, putting the cuff over your clothes. You're also supposed to be sitting and relaxing with both feet on the floor for 5 minutes. This rarely happens. And then there's another thing called white coat hypertension, which I'm sure you know is that some people feel a little anxious when they go to the doctor, so their blood pressure will be high in the office, and then it's not at home. So you don't want to start that person on blood pressure medicine. So if someone has high blood pressure in our office, generally I like to have them relax, repeat it in the correct way, and if it's still high, and recommend home blood pressure monitoring for at least 2 weeks. Also, they should take it at a time when they're relaxed, waking up in the morning before coffee, reading the paper with your feet on the ground, thinking nice, calm thoughts. And it should be skin to skin, or rather skin to cuff. That's the correct way. And I think that your doctor's right, where generally the arm cuffs are considered more accurate than the wrist cuffs, just because it's closer to the heart. But I'm happy that you're taking your blood pressure at home, because that's the most accurate way to sort of get a good picture of what's really going on with your blood pressure over time and throughout the day.
Yeah, as long as you're doing it right. So, because it's been a bit of an educational process. I've found that Amazon, my favorite place to go for anything, offers a lot of these cuffs. And the one I have, I like simply because all of my information goes onto my phone, so that when I get to my doctor's office, okay, how's it been going? Well, here's the file. Take a look at it, because I take it twice a day, early part of the day and then just before bed at night.
Wow, you're a really good patient.
Well,
that's exactly
yeah,
what you're supposed to be doing.
There's reasons why I'm doing that. So, yes, that's why I'm a patient. When I first started becoming a patient a number of years ago when I came up with a chronic illness, I couldn't tell them how long it had been since I had seen a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Because generally, you know, I had a little cold or something, whatever. You medicated from the drugstore and on down the road. And then one day, boom, I find myself in a situation where, like, what has happened to me? So,
well, yes. That's very, you know, that's very common. It's kind of like I would recommend that people think of, you know, if you're otherwise healthy, just going for a checkup every 6 to 12 months. Just to see what's going on, because like you said, you can be trucking along feeling totally fine, not going to the doctor, and then you go one day and it's kind of like, what's going on in my body? I didn't know all of this was there. It's kind of like, you know, the importance of getting your teeth cleaned every 6 months, for example.
Yeah.
You don't want to show up at the dentist after not going for 17 years, then you'll, you know, need all this dental work that hopefully possibly could have been prevented.
Yeah. Well, back in the old days when we used to go to the doctor, we had one and not everybody. Now if it's my toe, I get a toe doctor, whatever. You didn't really think a lot about it. And of course, now the insurance companies are saying they want you to do annual, I call them physicals, they call them wellness checks, whatever. You know, it's all the same thing, I think. I learned that there was a possibility that what has been going on might have been detected a little earlier because exactly as you said, you're just humming along. I feel good. I feel great. And then boom, just like that. So it's important to keep the check, just like your car. You know, you got to do maintenance to your body. And especially as we're getting older and older, it requires more maintenance.
Yes. Older and older and generally living longer and longer, actually. So similarly to a car, if you're going to have a car for a long time, the best thing to do is have the annual, get it serviced annually, change the oil, et cetera, et cetera. Same with our bodies.
That's right. So, okay. Well, you know, I don't think this turned out to be that boring of a topic.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
You are on the ball, I see. So now again, we're talking with Dr. Sarah Humphreys, who is the Chief Medical Officer for Community Health and Wellness based in the North Canaan office. Just so people know, right behind the firehouse is where they're at. Brand new building, just about a year since they first opened up. And she is there 3 days a week, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Now, is there somebody there, another doctor there in the other 2 days, or?
Yes, well, we have a bunch of different nurse practitioners, and we have some behavioral health specialists. There's always someone available that can see you. We're not a walk-in urgent care.
Right.
That's something that for some reason is, we can't quite figure it out, but it seems to be the consensus that we are in urgent care, so we get a lot of walk-ins that really should be going to Sharon Hospital.
Yeah.
But we're there for infectious disease consults because I'm actually an infectious disease doctor and general primary care internal medicine.
Well, I think we have really run this topic out. So I want to thank you so much, Dr. Sarah Humphreys, who is with the Community Health and Wellness based in the North Canaan Center here on Robin Hood Radio.
Thank you so much for having me.